Mormon Stories podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org. Well, Lisa Butterworth, welcome to Mormon Stories podcast.
Thank you.
Now, I went back and looked in my archives. The first time I contacted you about doing an interview, believe it or not, was in 2005. So not only were you one of the first people I ever thought to interview, but it's taken us like 5 or 6 years to actually do this. What's up with that?
I'm very difficult and extremely flaky.
I doubt that, but I'm so glad you could come on. So thanks again.
Thanks for having me. I wanted to do it from the very first. I just, you know, it was always like, well, won't my kids be around? And they're always around.
Yeah. Well, you're caring a lot. So, well, let's start. I love to hear as much as you're comfortable talking about your young years growing up in the church. You know, all the stuff that would lead to, but not including, your decision to start your blog. So tell us about you.
Okay. Well, I grew up in a small, southern, very Mormon town, Castledale, Utah. And
Where's Castledale?
Castledale is southeastern, kind of between Price and Moab.
Okay.
It's the middle of nowhere, and there's no reason to go there unless you really mean to go there. It's not on the way to anything.
Right.
But it was a really nice place to grow up, and it was a very lovely church atmosphere. Like, I just felt very included and very much part of the church, and I loved my neighbors and the people I grew up with and the people in my ward. I just always had wonderful experiences in the church.
What were your parents like?
My parents are very conservative. Well, my dad passed away a couple years ago, but he was very conservative, and my mother's still quite conservative. She's very, very traditional, but also doesn't fit the traditional mold as well as she'd like, because she's kind of mouthy and tactless like I am. And so, you know, she always would admire the ladies who were all sweet and quiet and demure, but she was never quite that woman. And my dad was just very mellow, and he was the best person. He was just genuinely as good as he expected everybody else to be. And, my mom too, just really easy to be around, easy to grow up, best parents, best. My brother always says that we won the parent lottery. And they, you know, they really had high standards about church stuff. You know, we were expected to take seminary. We did family home evening. We woke up early for scripture study. But it wasn't oppressive or anything. At least it wasn't for me, because I was genuinely into it. You know, I liked it. And, you know, they really versed me in Mormon doctrine and scripture, and they took it all very seriously, and they did a really good job. But
what was your dad's profession?
Well, my dad was a coal miner for most of my childhood. But then when I became a teenager, he got laid off from the coal mines and went back to school and became a school teacher. So he was a school teacher for the last few years that I was home. And my mother was a housewife until just about the time that the coal mines went down. She actually went back to school and became a school teacher as well. And so she had just gotten a job as a school teacher when my dad got laid off as a coal miner. So that was good. It kept us through the hard times. So, and so then my last few years at home, they were both school teachers.
And how many siblings?
I had 5 brothers and 2 sisters.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was the youngest.
Youngest of 8?
Uh-huh, the youngest of 8. And my dad always grew a really big garden, you know, very Mormon. And my mother always preserved everything all summer long. And we had chickens and a couple acres. And big pile of coal in the backyard to burn in the fireplace, and because he was, you know, worked in the coal mines. And then most of my brothers now work in the mining industry. My I have a brother that works with the gold mines, and two brothers that work with the Trona mines
in Utah,
Wyoming and Nevada, actually.
Okay.
Yep. And then the other two, what did they do? Oh, yeah. Nothing to do with mines.
have you ever seen the movie How Green Was My Valley?
No.
It's an Oscar winning movie on a coal mining town. You should see it.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to look that up.
It's a classic.
Yeah. Most of the mine accidents that you hear about in Utah, there was one last year and, you know, several. That's all usually right where I grew up.
Did you go to BYU? What led to you becoming a self-proclaimed feminist? Like, what in your journey took you down that path?
Well, you know, I think the seeds of it started early because there are a lot of little things that kind of stick in my head that just didn't make sense to me, you know, and they were, you know, I've blogged about this, but, you know, it started out with little questions like, well, if people in the rainforest don't wear clothes and they don't have garments, does that mean they're bad? And then, you know, we'd go on family vacations and I'd see adults wearing shorts and I just would be so discombobulated by that because they didn't seem like evil people, but they weren't, they were wearing shorts and that was so wrong. Grown-ups don't wear shorts, you know, and just lots of little things that I sort of realized that, you know, I just didn't, it just didn't make sense to me. And one of the big ones was with, African-American, cult. Well, one of my brothers moved to North Carolina and I went and spent a summer with him when I was 16. And oh my goodness, the stuff that he said about, you know, the mark of Cain and the, you know, the less righteous people in the pre-existence and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of thought, like, a part of me felt like I had to believe that because, you know, so often you hear it's, you know, it's all or nothing. You believe it or you're, you know, you're a bad person. And my brother was, you know, he was very, very sure of his opinions. But it made me kind of, you know, like I felt like I had to believe it and I tried to believe it. But it never really sat well with me. It never, you know, I couldn't bring myself to accept that. And as I couldn't bring myself to accept that, I think that sort of allowed me not to accept some of the other unfairnesses. You know, like I remember my mother going in to the bishop and throwing a huge fit because the boys were getting all this Boy Scout stuff and the girls weren't getting anything. And I remember how much trouble she got in and, you know, just little things like that, that I, you know, and my mother would always say, well, it's just the people. It's not the church, you know, but I was jealous of all those boys passing the sacrament. I wanted to do that, you know, and I just little things. And I tried not to be, and I tried to just accept it. And I tried to believe all the standard excuses, right. But I just never, none of it ever really sat well. And I was 18 and I left home. I went to Utah State and got married right away.
In Logan.
In Logan. Yes.
Oh, go Aggies.
Go Aggies. But that, you know, 18, right when I was leaving home was really when I was starting to have my faith crisis. And, part of that was that I'd never had that like burning in the bosom or that confirmation that they always say that you should have. And I really started to get confused when I would have, cause I thought that the spirit was that thing that, you know, like that goosebumpy feeling you get when someone says something that, you know, really strikes home. But then I would get that goosebumpy feeling in places that had nothing to do with the gospel. Yeah. I remember getting it while watching a movie about the Freedom Riders.
Right.
And, you know, that just really didn't work with them being less righteous in the pre-existence, and then I'm having this confirmation, you know, this spiritual experience while watching a video about the Freedom Riders, and you know, like it didn't work for my black and white way of thinking. It just didn't work, and so I decided that I hadn't really ever had that spiritual experience, and so I started reading my scriptures every day and praying like crazy and fasting all the time to have this spiritual experience. And I probably started that when I was about 17. And I went years and years without ever missing a single day of scripture reading, scripture study. I took it really seriously. And after a while, and in that time, I met my husband, and the bishop that I went to, I told him, you know, when we were going in for our temple recommend interview, I told him, I'm like, you know, I've never had that confirmation. I've been trying really hard. I want it. And I've been praying and I've been trying. And, he was like, oh, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. You know? And so I was really honest about the kind of crisis I was in, but he didn't think it mattered. And so I figured, you know, well, he's the one that has the, you know, the authority and the you know, spiritual confirmation that I'm supposed to be in the temple. So if he thinks I should be in the temple, then I'm going to go. And I was really honest with my future husband as well. I'm like, I'm sort of having a faith crisis here. And, I don't know. It didn't seem to bother him. I think it did a little bit, but I don't know. I've never really discussed that with him. I don't know. He wasn't quite ready to get married, I don't think. I mean, we were really young, right? But you know, we were kind of at that spot where young Mormon couples get, where it was either, you know, commit a big sin or get married.
Right.
And, you know, and he just couldn't bring himself to, you know, break up.
Right.
And we sort of tried the breaking up for a week or two, but it made us both really miserable. So we got married and it has worked out really well. I mean, I think back on who I was at 19 and I think, oh, wow, I'm so lucky. Mm-hmm. So lucky that I didn't make a really stupid mistake, but I've been really happy with my choice. He's a wonderful man. But anyway, so that, but he grew up in a whole different kind of family. His family, they were never terribly active in the church. They started becoming active in the church when he was in high school and started becoming active himself. And, a little bit, you know, they went to church a bit with him. And then when he went on his mission, they started really going to church quite a bit. But they're a lot more casual about it than my family, you know.
Right.
Well, so we got married and I don't know, I just sort of drifted for a while. Well, for a while I still really tried hard, actually. I was still into the whole scripture reading and searching and seeking and you know, just trying so hard to get that spiritual confirmation that I thought I needed in order to have, you know, a testimony. And, then after a while, we didn't really mesh well in our ward at all. We felt sort of, you know, like, I don't know. It just didn't work. It just wasn't a good place. And,
where were you at the time?
Just in Logan. And I don't know why. I don't know why, but, and so we went to church, but weren't really into it. Like I'd always been, you know, like I'd always been so into it and I'd always been, you know, called to some leadership role and, you know, and that just didn't happen anymore. We didn't get callings that, I don't know. It just, and so, you know, we still went to church, but we were just not into it. And things just kind of went on like that for a while. And then after a while, I kind of got to a point where I sort of felt like this is never going to happen. And I sort of lost hope.
In receiving a confirmation?
I did. I'm like, I have done everything that they tell me that I am supposed to do, and nothing, you know? And it couldn't possibly be me, so just a second, I'm letting my dogs out.
No problem.
The dogs, oh. So, I'm like, it couldn't possibly be me. It must be that there's no God, maybe, you know? And that was so, oh goodness. You know, like, I don't know. I didn't know how to deal with that idea. And I was really unhappy about it for a long time. And I finally was about to just accept it. Just say, okay, I guess I'm not cut out to be, you know, all this work and all this. Oh, and in the meantime, while I'm going through all that, I just started also realizing that I wasn't politically conservative. And I think that might have been also part of why I wasn't really meshing with my ward anymore. Because I wasn't used to not agreeing with all those comments in Sunday school. But I kind of started, I remember going to an institute class and the teacher telling me that nothing good came out of the feminist movement.
Right.
And I remember thinking, he cannot possibly mean that. There's just no way that he can mean that. You know, because I didn't know what to think of the feminist movement myself, but nothing? Please.
Right.
Please. And you know, I just that and I just sort of realized that this black and white thinking wasn't working for me. And I started realizing that I just all you know, a lot of the political things. I mean, I still really struggled with a lot of issues politically and spiritually, and but I wasn't in that black and white mode of thinking anymore. And so I guess I just got to this point where I just threw everything away. Like I threw all of my preconceptions away. I just threw like everything that I thought I had believed. I just threw it all out and I sort of started from scratch.
Now, what age was this?
Oh, probably 21, 22, you know? And so, you know, I started, I don't know, just asking questions. I used to, you know, like, and part of it, I think, too, was my husband, because I would just get so upset about things and I'd say this and this and this and this. And he'd say, well, how do you know? And then I'd say, because I know. And then he'd say, well, how? And then I'd have to think about it and I'd be like, I really don't know how I know that, you know? And so he was just sort of hard on me that way, which was good. I needed it. And I
So,
think,
were you taking classes on feminism in college?
I took one class. Well, I took a class on women's history, but that was it. And you know, that was interesting. I learned a lot, and I wish I would have taken more. I really do. I wish I would have. Because I'm very interested in that sort of thing. And I also took a Black history class, Black History of Black America. From Ross Peterson.
Oh wow, he's great.
Oh yeah, have you ever interviewed him for Mormon Stories?
Not yet, but he's here at USU. I'd love to. I've met him.
Oh, he is the most amazing teacher
Yeah.
ever,
Yeah.
ever. But and I also, you know, I went to Ross several times saying, you know, how do you do this? How do you know, how do you do this Democrat Mormon thing, you know, and are you sure you seriously believe in the church? You know, like really?
Right.
And he,
Yeah.
you know, and but you know, you can't borrow someone's faith. I was kind of hoping I could borrow his faith. And I also remember thinking, well, I think Einstein believed in God. Maybe if I read more about Einstein, and he's so smart, he must know something. I don't know. But you can't intellectualize yourself into faith. You just can't do it. I tried. I
Yeah,
tried.
sure.
And then what happened basically that kept me in the church was that I finally did have a spiritual experience. I was just driving with my good friend, my only feminist Mormon friend. And I had just gotten, we were kind of on a road trip, and I was just kind of, I'd gotten to the point where I was just going to admit it. I was going to accept that I just didn't know. And I was gonna just, I'm like, I'll just be an agnostic. That's fine. And I was going to tell her, I was going to admit, you know, we were talking about God and religion and Mormonism and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, I'm going to tell her. I'm going to tell her I don't believe anymore. I'm going to do it. And at that moment, like, I couldn't speak the words. Like, I was going to say, I don't believe in God. And I couldn't say the words, like, because at that moment, I did. Like, at that moment, I just had this overwhelming feeling, this just presence, this belief, this faith suddenly that I had not had all that time. I suddenly had it. Like, I don't, it just was there. Like, where it hadn't been before, it was. And you know, the intellectual back end of my mind is saying, oh, you just want to believe it so bad that you're creating this moment yourself. And then this other part says, but you know what? If this is a gift and you throw it away because you're talking yourself out of it, you know, that's ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just decided to accept the gift that this, I was just going to accept it for what it was, and I could intellectualize myself out of it. And I, you know, there are moments when I'm like, oh, forget it, you know, but I just knew, and I felt like, okay, I asked for it for all those years. And if I throw it away now, then that's really ungrateful.
So what did it come in the form of?
Well, you know, it's actually that same, you mean like the feeling?
Yeah. What was the form of the witness for you?
Well, you know, you've heard that, you know, like your lips become stopped or whatever. Like, what is that? They say that your lips can't, like, if you're about to say something that's wrong, you cannot.
Like a stupor?
A stupor of thought. It was a stupor of thought when I went, you know, I was going to declare my agnosticism, and I had a stupor of thought. You know, like my lips wouldn't speak those words. And at the same time, like, I just believed, like, I just felt like, no, God is real and God loves me. And, you know, feel, and, you know, I just felt loved, and I felt, I don't know. I just felt, it's an emotional, I don't know.
No, that's good.
Witness thingy.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, it's just, I guess in the same way that you can't intellectualize yourself into faith, it's a little bit difficult to explain an emotional spiritual experience in a way that makes sense, I guess.
But for you, it's real.
Yeah, for me, it was real. And, you know, the thing that kills me, though, is that I know so many people who've gone through the same thing that just wanted to believe with all their hearts, and they, with every genuine, you know, every bit of hope, every bit as much faith and hope as I had, and they don't get that. And I don't know why, but I completely sympathize with not getting it, because I didn't get it for years.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I don't blame anybody for giving up because I gave up. I was, you know, I was there.
Sure.
I was ready. I was ready to give up. And I don't know, you know, I don't know why I didn't. One thing that always, when I wonder why, you know, I kept at it all those years, and, you know, why at that moment I got that witness. One of the things that it reminds me of is when I was young, and my, some of my older siblings were going through faith crises and were, you know, not living the church the way they should, not going to church. You know, I was very judgmental about it because, you know, 12-year-olds are probably, I don't know if all 12-year-olds are, but I was,
right.
You know, and I remember, I really remember very clearly one time kneeling down and praying that I would never leave the church, you know, just praying with all my heart and soul that I would just never leave the church. And that sticks in my mind, because I think of all the prayers that I said over all the years that I would remember that prayer, you know, but it really stuck in my mind. And then I remember also thinking at the same time, of course I won't leave the church. That is so silly. I could never leave the church. Me, you know, like, why would I even bother to pray about this? This is ridiculous. Of course I'd never leave the church.
Right.
You know, but obviously I had no idea who I was going to become.
Sure. Life throws a curveball sometimes.
It sure does. And, you know, I just could not comprehend of a Lisa that wouldn't just, you know, be 100% churchy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But.
So what led you from that experience to blogging?
Well, it was actually quite a number of years. We moved up to Boise and had several wards here. And the ward we were in at the time was pretty good. I mean, it's a very accepting, kind, you know, atmosphere. But I still never really felt like I blended in, you know, because I was I'm a big old dirty liberal now. And I didn't have any friends that were Mormon and liberal. I had a few friends that I could talk politics with, but they didn't really understand where I was coming from the Mormon perspective. And I had, you know, some Mormon friends that just were not interested in talking politics at all. And I found that I really like to talk politics. I really like to talk about doctrinal stuff. I really like to talk about all this kind of like, I like to intellectualize and overanalyze everything. And my husband's just not like that at all. And, none of my friends that I had made here in Boise were like that at all. And I felt really isolated.
When you call yourself a dirty liberal, I know you're kind of joking, but were there experiences that you had? Were there ways that people treated you that made you feel, you know, not like you didn't fit in? Or is that just sort of something you assigned to yourself out of fear or paranoia or just things you hear that your views might not be welcome? Like, were you ever mistreated for progressive or liberal views, or did you just sort of feel self-conscious about them?
Well, my family loves to talk politics, and they're all pretty conservative or libertarian leaning. And so, you know, whenever we would get together, you know, if I expressed any views, they would gang up on me and attack.
Right.
And, you know, and also there's this, this indulgent, oh, she's the baby. She's, you know, like she doesn't either. She's been, what's it called? Brainwashed. Either she's been brainwashed or she's just rebelling or, you know, but I was never the rebellious type. And I'm really not the brainwashy type either. But, you know, they just, I don't know. It just rarely turned out well. And my mother, you know, when I sort of dipped my baby toe into talking to her about, you know, the changes that I had made in my thought processes, she just really couldn't handle it because she takes everything very personally. Like if you don't agree with her, then she takes it so personally, like that, you know, that you've rejected everything that she is and that you believe you're better than her. And she is a wonderful woman, but she's really insecure that way. And you know, I remember telling her that I was going to vote for Bill Clinton the second time. And she's like, why would you do that? And, you know, I tried to think of something sort of innocuous. So I said, well, because he's going to support, you know, student loans better. And she was like, well, you can't just vote for somebody for that reason, you know? And, oh, she was so upset. And, you know, and I knew I couldn't talk to her about it in any kind of rational, thoughtful, accepting way. And then at church, I really didn't talk about it because I already felt like an outcast. Like I already felt like I didn't belong because I knew that once I started, you know, accepting that I had faith and that this is where I should be and that this is where God wanted me, I still didn't feel like I belonged the way I used to feel because I used to belong just so seamlessly. Like it was just who I was and, you know, and I felt really entitled to my Mormonness and my, you know, being accepted. And when I became a liberal, I lost that. And when I had my faith crisis, I lost that feeling of it being entitled to being part of the group. And so I really didn't talk about who I was or what I believed. And when people would say things in church, which they do pretty much every week, I rarely go a week at church where I don't hear two or three comments that are very politically conservative in, you know, and nobody challenges it, you know, nobody, you know, if somebody gets up and in Relief Society, somebody got up and was talking about how she was so proud of a woman that didn't accept an award from Obama because she was taking a moral stand.
Right.
And, you know, and I just, and
you
nobody.
You learn to not fit in.
Yeah. And I, you know, and if you question that, then everybody, nobody, you know, nobody challenges the conservative views like that. But if I were to get up and, you know, say something about how much I love Obama and how, you know, then I would clearly not fit in. And I didn't know. And I think I worry too much about what people think about me.
Sure. Natural.
So, and so I didn't get a lot of, I mean, the few times that I do or have said something, I have had some, you know, less than fun experiences. There was just, you know, every time I blog about it on Feminist Mormon Housewives, I say, you know, I just don't say anything. And people say, you should say something because there are other people that are thinking the same things you are. And they think they're alone, just like you think you're alone. And if you don't say anything, then nobody ever, you know, nobody ever changes. And so I had really worked myself up. I'm like, okay, if I feel something, I'm just going to say it. And it was one of the lessons at the end of the year about Joseph Smith. And it was about Joseph and Emma and their marriage. And the teacher asked, she's like, well, what were the challenges they had in their marriage? And like all these things come up. Oh, they lost children and, you know, they were always moving and, you know, a million things, but never the most obvious difficulty that they face. Polygamy.
Yeah.
Not a single person brings it up. Not a single solitary person. I'm like, you cannot be serious. She asked us point blank, what were the challenges they faced in their marriage? And nobody's going to say anything about polygamy.
Right.
And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to say something. So I raised my hand and I'm like, well, you know, I would say that the largest difficulty they faced in their marriage was polygamy. And, you know, I didn't say anything really out there. I just tried to say that was really hard for Emma. Really, really, really hard. And, you know, and the teacher like completely shut me down. Like she interrupted me halfway through my sentence and like did everything but jump over and tie me down to stuff socks in my mouth. Like, you know, like, oh yeah, that was horrible. And then, you know, she went on with her next thing to change the subject. And, you know, I thought, okay, that'll teach, you know, like I really felt completely shut down. Like, you know, this is just a historical fact. It's not like anything even remotely. I mean, you could say things about the way he handled polygamy that would be much more traumatizing than that.
Right.
And just even saying the word polygamy, and I just get shut down. And, you know, and so that's kind of like, I don't want to do it again. I don't want to be the troublemaker that's always bringing up the thing that the teacher has to jump across the chairs and stick a sock in my mouth. Like, I just don't want to be that person.
Right.
And some teachers handle it better than others. And,
sure.
And this was the first time that she had taught a lesson. So maybe that was the problem too. I don't know.
So was feeling out of step with your ward members part of what led you to start the blog then?
Yeah. It was right before the election.
Which election?
The second Bush election.
Okay.
And I was just like crazy with my like intense desire to talk to people about this. And there was nobody. And, you know, I tried to talk to some friends that I had that were, you know, kind of on the more liberal side for, you know, Idaho.
Right.
And they just didn't get the perspective of a, you know, like a former conservative Mormon trying, you know, like, I don't know. They didn't understand the struggles. They didn't understand, you know, they didn't understand where I was coming from. And so I sat down and I started, just Googling random topics, wondering if there was something, somebody, somewhere that was talking about these things. And also, yeah, I was starting to really struggle in my ward. I was really not wanting to go anymore. And, you know, I had lots of little kids. I had three kids under the age of four. Right. And, you know, sacrament meeting is just horrible when you have three kids under the age of four. It's really torture. And you can't really talk about that either because, you know, it's supposed to be uplifting and spiritual and church is true and everything's perfect. And I don't know. I was just really struggling, not really wanting to struggle anymore, not wanting to go to church, not wanting to deal with, you know, and all those things, I think, just sort of came to a head. And I sat down, started Googling. I think I Googled first feminist Mormon and I think the article, who wrote it? By Where Have All the Mormon Feminists Gone?
Oh, yeah.
I think that was the only thing that came up in Google.
Right.
And so then I Googled liberal Mormons, and that took me to the Times and Seasons.
Which was an early blog, right?
Yeah, Times and Seasons was one of the first Mormon blogs, along with Dave's Mormon
Inquiry.
Yeah. Right. And so, and here they were. Like, here were all these, they weren't necessarily liberal, but they talked about all these things that nobody else would talk about. You know, like, they were just, like, throwing ideas out there, and they weren't thinking in black and white, and you didn't get shut down for saying things, and, you know, like, I remember reading the Times and Seasons commenting policies, and that was just like Christmas. I was just so excited because they say that you cannot question someone's righteousness, you know, because of their political beliefs or because of their, you know, that you cannot quit. And that was the thing that I always feared. That's the thing that just scared me to death, that is, if I said anything, then people would assume that I wasn't righteous, you know, because that seems to always be what happens. If you struggle with something, well, then you need to pray harder, right? You know, then you need to read your scriptures more. And I really didn't feel like that was what my problem was. Right. I felt like I was righteous enough. Sure. Or at least hopefully working on it enough, you know. And so, you know, like, oh, here's a spot. And then on the other hand, the other commenting policy was that you couldn't assume that someone was stupid for believing, which was where I had the other problem, because my, you know, friends from the other side that got my, you know, political ideology often thought, well, why are you bother with the church? You know, why do you bother if they're just driving you crazy? And, you know, like, I was like, okay, so. That here is a group of people that sort of by the rules have to accept where I'm at right now. And I was just like, yay.
Wow. Must have felt good.
It was so awesome. I was so happy. Like, I became a serious blog addict. It's all I did for weeks, months. And, but the problem was that the Times and Seasons, when I first got on there, they had several posts that were sort of women's issues. There was an abortion post and I can't remember. Something else. And I was like, oh yes, these are all the things I wanted to talk about with someone. These are all the subjects. Oh, and I remember just my mind being blown open by the way that people could approach these things, because I'd always thought that you know, like I'd never figured it out myself that you could approach it from a different way. That, like, I mean, I knew I didn't think in the black and white way that so many other people did, but I hadn't figured it out, like how to think for myself. Like, I hadn't really figured out how I could be, you know, like a pro-choice, pro-life Democrat at the same time. You know, like I could never figured that out. Like, because I really was so uncomfortable with the issue of abortion. Just, you know, I really felt like it was a moral issue, but at the same time, I really, really thought it should be legal. Right?
Right.
But, and I didn't know whether I should label myself pro-life or pro-choice. And I didn't know that there was any kind of, like, I sort of felt like it was black and white too. Like, you either had to be all in or all out. But I didn't, like, it just never occurred to me that there were other choices. And, you know, to hear all these, you know, especially Christine Haglund Harris and Julie Smith.
Right, sure.
They were the most active women back then. In fact, they're the only two women I can remember really being on there at all. And I was just like, wow. I fell completely in love with them. I was like, oh, you ladies, you're everything I want to be. And, but then after that, like, there just wasn't a whole lot of, you know, other women's issues that came up. And there were lots of interesting posts, but like, there were all these topics I wanted to talk about that had to do with, you know, kind of women's issues that just were not coming up anywhere. And, you know, I didn't have any control over that as a commenter. And I looked around for other blogs thinking there must be other blogs where these conversations are happening. Where are they? And I kept looking and looking. And the By Common Consent had just started.
Right.
And, you know, they had a few interesting posts. But again, it was mostly men and they were mostly talking about things that, you know, they were interesting. They just weren't really what I wanted to talk about.
Right.
And I realized that it just didn't exist. I finally, you know, after several months of frustration, I realized this, what I want really just doesn't exist. There's no feminist Mormon site anywhere. So I thought, well, I'll start these conversations. You know, I didn't. I just thought, well, maybe Christine Haglund Harris will come over and chat with me about them. Or, you know, there might be a few other people that are interested like me. I figured it would be me and maybe three other ladies. And we would just have a blast talking about whatever we wanted. And it would be fun. And it would be enlightening because I could learn stuff from them. And so I went into Blogger, which makes it very easy. And I chose pink because I decided I was going to, you know, like embrace my femininity. And pink was just sort of a trendy color at the time, I think.
Right.
And so I wrote down feminist Mormon, and I'm like, you know, it was an obvious kind of title, but I wanted something that said more about who, you know, that was a little catchier. And I, you know, I just was like, what else describes me? I'm like, I'm a housewife. And then I was like, oh, feminist Mormon housewife. That sounds so, you know, so oxymoronish.
Right.
And I thought, well, that's great. That'll really pique people's interest. That'll be good. So I started it, and I tried to start with like some posts that weren't that, that were not that controversial, because I didn't dare jump in the deep end of the pool.
Right.
You know, so I just did some posts about how much I hated VeggieTales because there were no female characters, and the female characters there were either evil or weak. And I don't remember precisely, but, you know, a few people showed up, and I kept writing some, you know, just posts, getting a little bit deeper into, you know, some things that bugged me, and, you know, a few more people showed up and felt good. And then Kaimi from Times and Seasons did a post about my blog, and more people came, and then it sort of just really took off. Like, I invited a few people to help me with that. I invited, one of the few, Mormon feminists I knew to blog with me. She was my niece-in-law. And she never had much time to do it. I know she reads it. But she's got like a real job and all kinds of responsibilities. So, but then I just found some people that stopped by, and I invited them to blog with me because I knew that, you know, I wouldn't be able to keep it up, keep it really active on my own. And I wanted some other people to help me kind of just keep posts coming on and, you know, keep engaging conversations. But even early on, I knew that I couldn't do it by myself, that I just wouldn't have enough time. I never thought I would run out of interest, though. Like, I knew that if I could do it all day, every day, for the rest of my life, I thought I would.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, Pixton.com. Thank you.
steps unto heaven, all that thou sendest me in mercy give. Angels to beckon me, nearer my God to thee, nearer my God to thee, nearer to thee. Then with my waking thoughts, bright with thy praise, out of my stony griefs, Bethel I'll raise. So by my woes to be nearer my God to thee, nearer my God to thee, nearer to thee. Or if on joyful wing, cleaving